just a second on climate change with a woman who is in the forefront and has been for years. Osprey Oriole Lake is with us now, and she is, as mentioned at the top of the hour, founder and president of the Women's Earth and Climate Caucus, also co-director of the International Women's Earth and Climate Initiative, coming up in just a couple of weeks later this month in New York. And Osprey, are you with us?
Yes, I am. Good to be on your show. Thank you.
Great to have you back. I should also mention your award-winning book, Uprisings for the Earth, Reconnecting Culture with Nature. We had you on the program when that came out. Seems to be, what, a couple years ago?
Yeah, a couple years ago, yes.
You have not been quiet or hidden in any way. You have been in the forefront of organizing women around the planet to take action, concerted action on climate change. Women seem to really be the key, and perhaps that's why we haven't made as much progress as we need to, because mostly men have been running things.
Yes, I mean, one of the things that we have found over the last, 5 years of a lot of research is that around the world, women are the most negatively impacted by climate change and environmental degradation. But the exciting thing is that they're also really key to solutions, and we're really mobilizing women to create the best impact we can. And, you know, so that our listeners don't think this is just sort of made up, I just want to cite a few things that really came out in our studies that I think are important. As an example, when you look at UN studies, you see when women are empowered through education and jobs, some really key things happen. Economies improve, which is very key to how we start having different impacts on our environmental policies. Populations stabilize, which is absolutely key, because no matter what we do, we are having a huge environmental impact, whether it's through carbon emissions or otherwise. We really need to stabilize our population. The key to do that is through women. We know in developing countries, about 60% to 80% of all household food production is in the hands of women. That's a huge amount of where our food is coming from. And when we look at the impacts and the footprint of agriculture, we really need to look into what women are doing. This is also true around water issues. We know that whenever you do, especially in developing countries, any work around water sustainability, you've got to involve women or the projects don't work. Lastly, I would just mention that in North America, 80% of all consumer purchases are decided by women. And so when we start really looking at these power of the purse campaigns, if you will, around, you know, demanding the end of fossil fuels, we really are looking strongly to women to unite together on some of these direct action campaigns around what we can do to affect divestment and reinvestment in clean technologies. So these are the kinds of things that we're looking at and seeing, you know, throughout time, the power of women and the women's movement, whether we're talking about the suffrage movement here and in other parts of Europe, or we're looking at the CIPCO movement in India, where women completely stopped the cutting down of their forests. We're really looking to unite these women to bring forth their solutions and use that sort of fierce power that women have when they realize that the health of their families is really at stake.
Hmm. You must have been encouraged with the Women's Climate Summit in May, White House gathering that started with 100 women working on climate in, you know, various aspects. And of course, we were there together. I found it a very good sign that the administration is getting serious about addressing climate change. And of course, about a month later, the president gave a speech on, you know, what his administration is doing. What were your thoughts after that?
Yes, I thought it was really encouraging to bring all these different women together from different sectors to, I thought it was very interesting that the White House recognized that women are actually a key constituency to address. Mm-hmm. That was a very, very good sign, and I think a lot more needs to happen. And what our organization is very excited about is that even before we had been invited to that event, we've been working, as you know, Betsy, for the last 2 years to now put forth this September, from September 20th to the 23rd, in New York, a very large international conference where we're bringing together 50 women from the global south, 50 women from the global north, to have a very high impact summit that is a working session, a strategy session, to really talk about what can we do. And it's a very sophisticated process we've been engaged in, as I say, for a couple of years, bringing women together to have a very holistic approach to sustainability solutions around climate. And we're very excited to have some wonderful leaders like Jane Goodall, Vanda Nishiba, Christiana Figueres, the Secretariat of the UN Climate Negotiations, Connie Hedegaard from the European Union, just amazing leaders, Dr. Sylvia Earle representing the oceans, and a host of amazing grassroots and indigenous women leaders whose names most people won't know but are doing amazing work on the ground around sustainability solutions at the local and national level. And we're bringing these women together to create what we're calling the Women's Climate Action Agenda, which is a very progressive agenda to call out to governments, to call out to grassroots organizations from all levels to look at really what needs to get done at speed and scale. Because I think, you know, and I know from listening to your show, which I love your show, and I love how assertive you are about addressing these issues, you know, earlier this year we learned that we've hit 400 parts per million of carbon emissions in the atmosphere, and we're just not moving at the level we need to. And we think bringing these women together to create this Women's Climate Action Agenda can really have a big impact, and we're certainly intending it that it will.
And how do you organize it? How do you structure it, Osprey, in a way that you know, all voices can be heard and ideas can be shared and people can participate from home and still come out with something cohesive?
That's a really good question. Right now, and I would love anyone who's listening to pass the word and participate themselves, we've decided that though there'll be 100 women in the room, that it was very important to invite the international community to participate in the development of this agenda together. So we are hosting a live stream throughout the entire event, which starts on September 20th and goes through the 23rd. And the way that people can go to the live stream is through our website, which is www.iweci.org. And there they can learn about what we're calling vision hubs. And basically it's a live stream, but we called them vision hubs because we're really seeing people collecting together or on their own and being able to participate with the process itself. People who are watching can be in a chat room or Skype with us or email with us and, you know, make suggestions to the plenary floor as the conversations are going on, and we're actually hammering out this agenda together. So we're very excited. There's, you know, many, many countries from around the world who have already signed up to have live stream participation with us. And we've spread, you know, the word obviously through a lot of our women's networks internationally, but men are also welcome to participate. It's really lifting up women's leadership, but it's for men and women alike to participate with us. And then we have a process where those comments online will be brought into the working groups. We have 8 working groups that are working on different aspects of climate change, again, looking at a very holistic approach, everything from renewable energies, cities and lifestyles, to rights of nature and new economics, to international policy, to indigenous peoples, to messaging and stories and how we relate climate change to the public. And I know earlier on the show you were really getting into a conversation about, you know, how do we message ourselves and get out to more people. So there'll be a working group on that as well. And people can participate in contributing to these ideas that we'll be having. Lastly, there's also on our website an online solutions forum where anyone can enter ideas that will also be brought to all of the delegates who are forming this Women's Climate Action Agenda.
Well, since my daughter just started school at NYU, I'm hoping maybe to have an excuse to go visit her and perhaps come by the summit as well, because it sounds like something I definitely would be interested in, especially women gathering.
We would love to have you, and you know, please offline send me an email. We'd love to have your participation.
Terrific. I have to just, you know, take my hat off to you, Osprey. I've been focused primarily on getting America, you know, Americans off their gases, if you will, and trying to just get mainstream media in this country to really help educate, help connect the dots. But you really have had that global perspective as long as I've been aware of you, which I think is at least a decade that I've been covering climate. And how do you not get overwhelmed? How do you not burn out, since we started the show interviewing Dave Roberts of Grist, who is unplugging for a year? You know, there's so much bad news in our inbox every morning before I've even had my cup of green tea. I sometimes get overwhelmed, and, you know, and yet it's so compelling. And and that's kind of the paradox of mainstream media, not getting, you know, how really interesting this is and relevant to everyone.
Yeah, I agree with you, and I think it is something, you know, just at a personal level, we all need to really find ways to renew I know that one of the things that's really important to me is to take time in nature. I like to walk on the ocean and be in the redwood forest here in California, and you know, take that seriously. I mean, people can think that that sounds hokey, but it's just not. I mean, a lot of the reason that we're fighting so hard, all of us, is for our children and the health of the planet, and it's also, I think, important to take time with the earth and get renewed. I think that's a really important part to balancing sort of the burnout. I think the other thing that's really important that we have found, and I think others too, and it has shown in different studies at universities, that, you know, when we are approaching something as gigantic as climate change and the fact that we're altering the entire ecosystems of our earth, it is very overwhelming, and the harsh stories that we hear, you know, from a lot of the women in our networks coming out of Africa and the droughts that they're facing and the starvation. I mean, it's unbelievable. Or your earlier guest talking about Superstorm Sandy. I mean, these real on-the-ground stories just bring tears to your eyes and break your heart. And so it is very challenging, but we have found, as others have too, that if you continue to talk about solutions while we're talking about, you know, the real awful fact of it all, it makes it palatable and kind of keeps your enthusiasm going when you start actually really hearing what people are doing, how much they care. And so, you know, I've been so inspired by a lot of the women that are delegates to our upcoming International Women's Earth and Climate Summit in New York, because, you know, we're hearing stories like from Solar Sisters, who is an organization that works in, they're based in the U.S., but they work in Africa, and they're creating opportunities for women to have small businesses around selling small solar units. There is a very large campaign in Australia called the 1 Million Women Campaign, where 80,000 women have signed on to personally make reductions, carbon emission reductions in their home, and it teaches them how to do that. So, like, there's this hands-on thing they can immediately do in their home. Really incredible work by Vandana Shiva with her farm in India, and how they're really advocating strongly for organic farms and how we don't need to use GMO seeds. I could go on and on. These amazing women, people, if they want to go online, they can see the biographies of the delegates and learn these very inspiring stories of what women are actually doing. And, of course, men are doing fabulous things, too, as well. We're just, you know, uplifting the women's stories in the work in our little corner of the world of what we're doing. And I think that's, for me, how I really address a lot of the burnout, is to continue to engage with my colleagues and work together for solutions.
By the way, the website is iwecc.org, and I just want to, in our remaining minute, just echo what you said at the beginning of your response about how getting out in nature really recharges you. And there's actually been research that it's a really significant way to reduce stress, that if you're sitting in front of your computer pulling your hair out, you know, burned out at work, take a walk, you know, look at the trees, look at the sky, breathe the fresh air. And we're lucky to have plenty of that where we both live here in the Bay Area, but, you know, it's hopefully everywhere where listeners are, and that really does make a difference.
Absolutely, absolutely. As you know, when we've talked last about my book, Uprising Through the Earth, Reconnecting Culture with Nature, I think, you know, some of the long-term solution to a lot of these environmental problems that we're facing that are so life-threatening is, I think, in the long run, you know, we're not in such deep crises, that we need to do simultaneously is really change our relationship to the natural world and to look to, I do a lot, to indigenous cultures and that deep respect and understanding of the natural laws and our living earth. And, you know, ultimately, I think this is a big question that we're facing, and I know a lot of women are interested in, is that reconnecting with the natural world, respecting nature, and understanding that we really need to have the way that we're living and our economic structures, our social structures, understand that that needs to be within the context of the natural laws and not overriding them. And so I think the more we connect with nature and feel that love and union with the forests and the rivers and the mountains, the more that our laws and our economics will reflect that.
Osprey Oriole-Lake, thank you for your wisdom, for your leadership, for your courage, for your unwavering dedication to this cause. I really have so much respect for you and the women you work with. I hope to see you in person perhaps later this month, and I hope our listeners will check it out and participate. Thanks so much. And if you've
joined us, thank you so much, Betsy.
Okay, part way, if you didn't catch the entire show, I urge you to catch it all at three great interviews today on different aspects of climate change. Dave Roberts retiring just for a year from GRIST. We had talked to a Hurricane Sandy survivor turned activist demanding that mainstream media does a better job of reporting the science of climate change. And, of course, our interview just concluded with Osprey about what's going on globally with women. It's enough to make you have hope for a better world and a better tomorrow. That's certainly what gets me up every day and continuing to do this show. Thanks for joining us. Have a great Green Week. And to our Jewish listeners, Happy New Year. We just come together.